Session number 8194, Reel 1.
Mr. Selby, Reel 1. How did you come to be in the Navy, Mr. Selby?
I joined as a boy on 5th of October 1936.
Were you a volunteer or a conscript?
Oh, volunteer, yes.
Why did you decide to join?
Well, I always felt I wanted to join the Navy, and as a matter of fact, I tried when I was 14, but wasn't acceptable then, of course. And then I went when I was 15.
And what type of job did you take up in the Navy?
Well, I'm seaman in the first instance. You were boy seaman in the first instance. And then later on, of course, qualify for torpedoing.
Did you have any choice about going in for torpedoes?
Oh, yes, yes. You could choose gunnery or torpedo, whichever you wished.
Why did you choose torpedoes?
Well, it included electrical work as well, you see, so I was interested in that. At a later date in the Navy, of course, the electrical branch became separate altogether. But at that time, the electrical and torpedo mines, depth charges, all of that came under one heading.
And can you tell me in a bit of detail about what the work of a torpedo man involved as far as you were concerned?
Well, it involved all those things I've just said. You see, you could be employed on electrical work or torpedo work, depth charges, mines, all of that came under that same heading at that time. But later on in 1946, the electrical branch became a separate thing altogether.
But what did your actual job on the torpedoes actually include? Can you describe it?
Servicing the torpedoes and, of course, crew member as well, firing them, etc.
Now, when did you join the Repulse?
January the 9th, 1939.
And can you tell me what kind of a ship she was to serve on?
She was a very good ship, very happy ship. When we first joined it, of course, we were working up to take the King and Queen to Canada. But when the war situation arose, that was cancelled, and they went on the Empress of Scotland. But we escorted them halfway across the Atlantic and came back again because of the war situation that was building up. She'd had all the, you know, royal apartments and etc. built on her and Portsmouth Dockyard ready for that trip.
Was she a very seaworthy ship?
Oh, yes, yes.
What were the relationships like between the officers and the men?
Very good. And that counted a lot later on in the war situation, because even when we were sunk, I suppose two-thirds of the ship's company were the same that joined her pre-war. So they were well-trained in that respect.
What did the crew think of the captain?
Oh, he was very popular, Captain Tennant. He was Admiral Sir William Tennant later on, but at that time, Captain Tennant.
Why was he popular?
Well, he was a man who worked with the ship's company, if you might say. He wasn't aloof or anything of that nature.
Did you ever meet him?
Yes, yes, quite a number of times.
Under what circumstances?
Well, during the course of my work or on the bridge and so forth. I was my night action station was Searchlight Control, which was on the compass platform just astern of the bridge. So I came into contact with him quite often.
So he would give you orders personally, would he?
Well, no, not personally, no, because you had a control officer there as well, you see.
What rank?
But he always spoke to you, you know, pretty frequently. The control officer would be a lieutenant.
Now, can you tell me if there are any problems aboard the Repulse with any of the equipment?
No, none other than, of course, she was a bit antiquated regarding anti-aircraft guns. That was something which was in mind for them to do, but it never materialized.
I think you were involved with the pursuit of the Bismarck.
Yes.
Can you tell me your experience of that?
Well, we were with the King George V, the battleship, and the carrier of the Victorious, and we were with other forces, of course, concerned with the chase of it, but we ran short of fuel before we actually came into contact with the Bismarck, and we had to go to St. John in Newfoundland to refuel. In fact, we did quite a lot of damage in the weather there and broke two breakwaters down on the way there. And then we had to go on from there to Halifax to have it repaired.
Did you see the accident happen?
No, it was just the rough seas that washed the breakwaters away, and we had to go on to Halifax in Nova Scotia to have the repairs done. So actually we didn't come into contact with the Bismarck at all.
What was the weather in the North Atlantic like at the time?
That was very rough. That's why we had the damage to the breakwaters.
What did the crew think about the prospects of tackling the Bismarck?
Oh, I don't think they were over worried. Obviously, you're a bit apprehensive of things like that, but they weren't worried, I don't think, not to that any extent.
Did any of them actually look forward to being in action?
I think so, because we've been fairly well involved in the war from the start, because the Hood, Renown and Repulse were the only capital ships which could catch the Scharnhorst and Gneisenau at the time, until the KG-5 class came into service. So we did quite a lot of sea time, even at the beginning of the war.
Did you see any action before the action in which the Repulse was sunk?
Well, only minor things, anti-aircraft things and such like.
Can you describe any of them?
One, when we were covering the evacuation from Norway, some Heinkel bombers dropped a stick all down our starboard side.
Where were you located then?
I was in the repair party then. Day Action Station was the repair party. Number 6 repair party, outside the engineer's office.
Did you see the air attack?
No. Only in the first instance, because at the offset I was on the bridge, as a matter of fact, but of course I had to go down below when Action Stations were sounded.
How many planes attacked?
3 at that time.
So you didn't actually see the bombs land?
No, just heard them, of course, and felt the jar as they fell along the starboard side.
What was that like?
Well, as it was our first experience, because this was early in the war, of course, it was a little upsetting, I suppose you could say, but we soon got used to these things.
Now, can you tell me how you got to the Far East on the Repulse?
Yes, we left Greenock with a convoy, a large convoy, and went round the Cape via Freetown. And at Durban, the convoy split up. Part of it went to the Middle East, and we took the rest of it to the Far East via Trincomalee.
Was it an uneventful trip?
Yes.
No enemy attacks?
No.
Did you receive a welcome at any stage on the way?
Well, we did when we got to Singapore. They were over the moon, as you might say, to see the fleet come in, because the Prince of Wales had joined up with us by then.
How did they show their pleasure at you arriving?
Well, they were lining the dockyard, and you know, were really welcoming us.
Did they have flags and so on?
Yes, yes.
Did you receive any presents from civilians?
Oh, no. But I think, as has been said before, the civilian population of Singapore and Malaya weren't quite believing that anything would happen at that stage, anyway. It wasn't until maybe a month before the war that they realized that things were getting bad.
Was that apparent to you when you got to Singapore?
Oh, yes, yes.
In what way?
Well, no one seemed to think that the Japanese would ever come down the land way. Everyone surmised that they come from the sea. And that's where the majority of the defenses were. But as you know, it didn't turn out that way.
Did you speak to civilians very much?
Not a great deal, but it was the general attitude in papers and such like.
Did they seem to be taking any war precautions, such as blackout?
No. Even when the first air raids happened, there was no blackout.
Did you see the first air raids?
Yes, we were in harbour when the first air raid happened. They went over the naval base and actually bombed Singapore City, but we opened fire. That I did see, because being a night action station, I was on the bridge then. Searchlight control.
Could you see how many planes were involved?
Oh, no, not at night, no. Later on in the day, they usually came over in groups of 54.
And did they just bomb, or did they strafe as well?
At that stage, they only bombed, but later on, they strafed.
Was it high-level bombing or dive bombing?
High-level bombing.
And how many rounds did you fire from the repulse?
Well, I couldn't say, actually, not being in the gunnery branch, but quite a number. And the Prince of Wales did, of course, but then she had much heavier AK-AK armament.
Could you see whether there was any success against the Japanese planes?
No, I don't think so. Like most AA fire, I suppose the idea is to keep them up.
When the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor occurred, did it take everybody by surprise, or were you expecting?
Oh no, it took everyone by surprise, but it still didn't make any difference to the civilian people of Singapore. They still didn't think anything would happen there. That was the general attitude all along.
What did you feel about the prospects of America coming into the war on our side?
Well, it would be a good thing, obviously, out there, because we had so little out there in our forces. We had plenty of troops, it's true, but otherwise, as far as the air and navy was concerned, it was very... And a few Dutch ships, of course.
What was the opinion about the American Navy and the Royal Navy?
Well, we hadn't had much to do with them, so we didn't really know at that stage. Later on, of course, we did know that they did a good job out there, there's no doubt about that.
What did people think about the Japanese as an enemy? Were they regarded as a tough opponent, or a pushover, or what?
No, I think they realized they were a tough opponent, but as I say, they didn't realize that they would get to that stage, to Singapore. They thought they would be stopped long before that. That was the general opinion.
Now, can you describe in detail, as much detail as you can remember, the actual voyage on which ended up with the Repulse being sunk?
Well, we left Singapore with the idea of intercepting an enemy convoy which was going in towards the northern part of Malaya. But on the way up, we were shadowed by an enemy aircraft, and Admiral Phillips decided it was too dangerous, so we turned around and were on the way back to Singapore when we got a report, which eventually turned out to be false, but they didn't know that at the time, of another landing at Kuantan. And we flew off one of our walrus aircraft to spot, and he came back to report that he couldn't see anything. But in the meantime, the Japanese raid started, and so he put his walrus down low on the water and beat it back to Singapore, but he didn't reach it. He ran out of fuel, and some American destroyers towed him into Singapore. And that's when our troubles started. The first lot of bombs fell underneath the stern of the Prince of Wales and put her steering gear out of action. So she was going round in circles, and they then concentrated on the repulse, and we dodged 19 torpedoes before we were actually hit. But we'd been hit previously by one bomb, which went through the catapult deck, but didn't go through the armoured deck. But it did quite a lot of damage, but not to impair the efficiency of the fighting efficiency of the ship.
Now, where were you at the time that the attack took place?
I was in number 6 repair party, which was outside the engineer's office in the flat on the port side, aft.
And was that above decks or below decks?
Oh, below decks.
How far below?
3 decks down. And then when the bomb hit the catapult deck, number 4 repair party had a lot of casualties, and we had some. The fellow who stood next to me, as a matter of fact, was killed, but Stoker. But they then split our party up. Some of them went forward to number 4 to reinforce them because of the casualties, and the remainder of us went aft to number 7 repair party, which was down in the engineer's workshop, which was further down again below the armoured deck.
Was this still on the port side?
Yes.
When the bomb landed on the catapult deck, can you describe your experience of it?
Well, there was just a huge bang and a flash, and of course metal flying everywhere, and I presume that's something like that that hit this stoker that was stood next to me. We carried him after the after medical flap, but he was dead, so we just left him at the top and the surgeon told us to leave him.
What was the morale like?
Oh, very good. No trouble at all. And as I say, when we were down in the engineer's workshop, we could feel the torpedoes hitting, of course. 4 on the port side and 1 on the starboard. And the ship began to list heavily, but and order was given to abandon ship, but the tannoy system in the after end of the ship was out of action, so we didn't get it. So the first inclination we really had, although we were going over to port, was when the water started to come down the shaft down into the engineer's workshop.
How much water?
Well, the hatch itself isn't very wide, about 2 foot wide, 2 foot square, and so when it started to pour down there, I suppose there was 100 men down there, and it was obvious that they weren't all going to get out, not if the ship was sinking at any rate. And but there was no panic. Everyone got into a line, and I suppose I was about the 12th up. And when I got up the shaft, you come out of the shaft onto that what they call the half deck, and I was up to my chest in water. And I managed to wade across there to the and out onto the quarter deck, which was of course at about 50 degrees then. and crawled up the quarter deck and then over onto the ship's side. Well, a lot of men jumped then, but as the ship was going, still going quite a speed through the water, of course they got sucked underneath. But the remainder of us waited, and then when she did slow down, we jumped into the water.
Was there any pushing and shoving to get
in line? None whatsoever. No, it was all very... The discipline was, as I say, the crew had been there all that time, and I think this showed.
Was there any set place which you had to go to in the line, or was it just first come, first served?
Well, no, everyone just lined up, and we went up the hatch quite orderly.
Was there an officer in charge?
No, there was no officer down there at all. There was chief and petty officers, but no officer.
So who was the man in charge?
I can't remember his name. There was chief engineer, ERAs, engineer artificers, and stoker petty officers, of course, and our own petty officer, torpedoman, as he was then.
When the attack took place, had you any work to perform, any duties to perform?
No, other than that is what we were there for, waiting for damage. That was our job, to repair damage as much as possible. In our case, of course, the electrical repairs.
Did you...
Because in the repair party, you have the stokers for shoring up bulkheads and such like. Electrical ratings for electrical repairs, running emergency leads, shipwrights, and they all had their own specific job to do in the case of damage.
Did you personally repair any damage?
No.
You weren't called upon to do it?
We did later on, when we got to move back to number 7 repair party, which was in the engineer's workshop, as I said. The shock of the torpedo hit the circuit breakers off of the after guns. So we had to, that was a petty officer, myself, and an ordnance warrant officer, we had to open an armoured hatch and go down and put the circuit breaker back on, and so that the guns could carry on firing, of course. But other than that, we didn't do any repairs.
How long did it take you to repair that?
Oh, only about 10 minutes, I suppose.
Now, can you tell me what happened to you next after you went into the water?
Well, of course, you had about a foot of oil fuel on the water, which killed a lot of people by swallowing it. It made me very sick, but nothing more. And I managed to get out of a barraco, which is the water container for sea boats.
What's it called?
A barraco.
How do you spell it?
B-A-R-R-O-E. I think that's how it's spelled, yeah. And I hung on to that for a while until I reached a Carly float. Some of the Carly floats had been got into the water, but and one or two boats had floated off, but there was nothing actually launched.
Was it difficult to prevent yourself swallowing the oil?
It was, yes. As I said, it made me very sick, which was probably a good thing.
Why do you say that?
Well, because it killed a lot of people by swallowing this all the time.
So you mean you got rid of it?
Yes, I think that was a good thing.
Was the water rough?
Oh, no, very calm. And warm, of course. Well, that was no problem.
What happened to you next?
Well, then the destroyers, of course, started to pick up survivors, and the Electra came nearest to us in the first instance. But just as she came alongside us, the Japs came over again. Well, then they got underway at speed and opened fire again, because they didn't know what they were doing. But actually, the Japs didn't do anything. They didn't do any strafing or or dropping bombs or anything. They just flew over, and then eventually I got picked up 3.5 hours after we sunk by the Vampire, the Australian destroyer.
How did you spend that 3.5 hours in the water?
Well, I was hanging on to the Carly float eventually. The Carly float itself was full up, and then the remainder of us were hanging on to the ropes around, which are around it, of course.
Were people helping each other, or was there any squabbling?
Oh, no, no squabbling whatsoever. And they were helping one another and singing, as a matter of fact.
What were they singing?
Well, Roll Out the Barrel, and it's all the songs that they used to sing during the war.
In what way were they helping each other?
Well, those that, you know, were in distress in the water were poured in to the Carney floats, and those of us that were all right, we remained in the water.
Did the Japanese leave you alone or attack
yes,
you?
Yes, no, they didn't do anything more. They, as I said, they flew over that once, but they didn't do anything. And then eventually the Brewster Buffaloes, the Australian Brewster Buffaloes, came across our fighters, of course. But they were too late.
Could you recognise them as Australian planes?
Well, I couldn't recognise them at the time, but I know they were Australian, an Australian squadron.
You didn't think they were Japanese?
Oh, no. No, they were the squat, very squat Brewster Buffaloes. American planes.
You could recognise them as American
yes,
planes, could
yes.
you?
Well, American built, but they were, so to say, Australian manned.
Was there any fear from dangerous fish whilst you were in the water?
Well, I believe there are sharks there, but then the possibility is remote because of the oil fuel and the bombing and banging going on. I don't expect there was any real danger from that. I wouldn't have thought so anyway.
Were you frightened of sharks when you were in the water?
It didn't even enter my head, quite honest.
What was your main
fear? Only when you thought of it afterwards, you think of that. Well, to be quite honest, there wasn't any, really, at that time. Of course, later on you think about these things, but at that time, no. In fact, I didn't see fear at all in anyone.
Were many people in difficulties because they couldn't swim?
One or two, yes. But, and it's rather surprising. I mean, for instance, one fellow I know, Perios Aboard, who was a torpedo like myself, he was a champion swimmer, but he didn't get away with it. I know he went into the water, but he didn't get away. But there again, that could have been the oil fuel.
How well could you swim?
Reasonably well. Yeah. We were taught the hard way as boys.
What was that?
Well, if you couldn't swim, you made you get into the swimming pool, and two physical training instructors with a bamboo pole just walked along the edges of the swimming pool. So if you didn't swim, you got a bang on the back of the head. So we soon learned to swim.
This was at school, was it?
At St. Vincent, the training. This is the tie I'm wearing now, St. Vincent Association.
This was the RN training school?
Yeah. At Gosport, Portland.
So, what clothing did you have on in the water?
I had overalls, because most torpedo men wore overalls all the time, but that's what I had on.
Shoes?
Yes, shoes, and, you know, just underwear, that's all, and the overalls, that's all.
Were you encumbered by the clothing?
No, not at all. I had a life belt on, but I didn't have it blown up, because that was the original life belts that I had then. They found that